Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Women of Color Network Hour, where we will discuss specific topics related to gender-based violence and its impact on the African American community. The Women of Color Network is a project of the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence and is dedicated to ending violence against women of color and their families by promoting the leadership of women of color advocates. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Now, on to tonight's show.
Hello, and welcome to the Women of Color Network Monthly Radio Blog Hour, where we bring you a range of topics addressing domestic violence in the African American community. As a national network, we use our collective voices to advocate for and educate about women who experience violence and hold abusers accountable. We use our radio blog show as a means to engage our guests and communities on important issues that we all should be talking about and taking action on wherever we are. My name is Sister Samaya Fire. I'm one of your hosts for this evening for the IDVAC and WOCN Blog Talk Radio Show. And I am a national trainer on a variety of topics regarding violence against women, racial disparities, and cultural relevance in the outreach to our communities, especially about Black women and the justice system. I like talking with Black women advocates who focus on culturally specific issues of women, children, and families who experience domestic and sexual violence. I'm an independent consultant and organizer on social justice and human rights issues. Usually I have my community sidekick host with me, the fabulous Miss Alice, but she's not able to join us tonight, and so you have me and two wonderful guests tonight all to yourself. But for now, I'm going to shift to Shazmi to do our commentary, and then I'm going to come back and introduce our fabulous expert guest to you tonight. Shazmi, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much, Samaya. Good evening, listeners. My name is Shazmi Jackson, and I am the program coordinator for the Women of Color Network. I will be framing tonight's topic by providing key statistics and background information for our show tonight. Tonight's topic is about using art to heal after sexual assault. I'll begin tonight by acknowledging that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we give honor and voice to the many individuals and families who've experienced or are experiencing the trauma of sexual assault. These traumas can have a various effect on a person, and acknowledging these effects can be an important first step in embarking on a process towards restoration and healing. Trauma from sexual assault can leave lasting damage to a woman's self-esteem and overall mental health. It is more than a physical violation. It is also a form of mental domination and oppression that leaves survivors with a lot to overcome as they try to rebuild their lives. Even though many survivors may experience similar types of abuse and pain, healing and recovering the aftermath is different for everyone. Some survivors may turn to traditional counseling and crisis interventions for help. These services are helpful and are critical to the survivor and are often used to express feelings, thoughts, and fears. while mainstream approaches are helpful, they're not necessarily holistic and often either overlook or are unable to address the fact that the spirit of the victim needs attending to as well. This is a major difference between the process of alternative healing and recovering and mainstream approaches to sexual assault. Incorporating alternative healing modalities that address the impact of sexual trauma on one's body, mind, and spirit allows the survivor to fully address their pain and trauma. One way to do that is through the use of art. Art healing includes activities such as dancing, drama, drawing, creative writing, painting, writing poetry, making music, sculpting, and photography. Art is a safe way for survivors to express their feelings. It helps them express themselves slowly and at their own pace. Art goes beyond words, and it tells a story for them. It helps them delve into their true selves and express their pains and heartache in a way that language does not have the ability or the power to convey. Feelings that stem from trauma, violence, or abuse are often overwhelming, and words alone rarely capture or convey the true intensity. Pictures, music, and images and movement tell us far more than the words can express, and tapping into our artistic selves and creative minds can help provide a whole world of self-discovery. Art can be one of the best healing tools possible when emotions are too painful and too deep to talk about. Many experts have long agreed that art allows survivors the opportunity to grow and develop self-awareness through self-expression. This has been shown to reduce stress and accelerate psychologically and physical healing. Studies have also shown that when survivors engage in healing art, it alerts the parasympathetic system in the brain, and their breathing slows, their blood pressure lowers, and the body becomes more relaxed. This helps reduce the psychological hyperarousal or that fight-and-flight response that's often associated with stress. Creative expression modifies our biochemistry and improves our physical well-being. When survivors participate in the art, it actually changes their bodies. Many programs have supplemented traditional individual, group, and family intervention with art therapy. These organizations found that successful treatment outcomes were higher for survivors who participated in these therapies than those who did not. While trauma from sexual assault can leave lasting damage to a woman's self-esteem and overall mental health, no community is impacted more than communities of color, especially African Americans. Sexual assault against African Americans is not only an attack on their identities as women, but on their racial identities. Research indicates that women of color are often at elevated risk for sexual assault due to the multiple risks and barriers they face that intersect to make their victimization experience fundamentally different from the victimization of white women. These risks and barriers include battling a long history characterized by racial violence in the United States, stereotypes and racism that mark victims as responsible for their own rapes or unrapable, poverty, distrust of it, and alienation from public services, and the lack of availability of resources such as race crisis centers and health care. Given these realities, self-care and healing the mind, body, and spirit is necessary, an essential part of recovery and feeling well for survivors. Recovery from sexual assault is possible, and while it requires addressing painful realities, it also entails discovering new inner strength, a process that needs time, space, and safety to begin. We invite our audience to join the conversation in learning the variety of mind-body-spirit modalities that have been found to be helpful with addressing sexual trauma and healing our communities. Thank you for listening. Now back to our show with Samaya.
All right. Thanks, Sister Shazmi, for your commentary, your words to help us frame our conversation for tonight. And as we know, this month is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we're so glad to have two experts in the field on our show tonight and to help us talk about this in the context of healing and using the art to heal our minds and our bodies as well as our community. So tonight we have Kalima Johnson, and we also have Dayanara Marte. So I'm going to check in with them before I introduce them to make sure you're on the line. Kalima, are you there?
I am here, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited about talking about the topic tonight.
Great. I'm so glad you're on. And what about you, Dayanara? Are you there? Want to make sure that Dayanara is on the line. Are you there? And maybe you're on mute. I'm going to check in again to see if she's there. But while I'm waiting on her, I'm going to make sure that I do a good job introducing Kalima, my friend Kalima.
Hi,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm here.
Hi.
I didn't unmute myself. Thank you for having me. I'm definitely here. I hear you. I'm excited for what we can create tonight.
Great. I'm glad you're here. I'm going to introduce Kalima. Kalima Johnson is an adjunct professor of social work at Mary Grove College and founder executive director of Sasha Center in Detroit, Michigan. She's a domestic violence and sexual assault consultant to the National Basketball Association, the NBPA Rookie Transition Program, Top 100 Camp, Michigan Elite 25 Camp, and the NFL Detroit Lions. Kalima received her Bachelor of Social Work degree, and she has a Master's Social Work degree, both from Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. Her concentration was in advocacy, mental health, and school social work. She is licensed in Michigan and Illinois as a clinical social worker. Her practice experience has focused on providing a comprehensive range of services to survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. She conducts workshops on topics of relationship safety, incest survivor, and community awareness relating to violence against women. She is also the chairperson of the Sexual Assault Awareness Month event, Take Back the Night Detroit. She's a member of the National Association of Social Workers. She's a Delta and the Michigan Coalition Ending Domestic and Sexual Violence. She's a performer, a poet, and she has published numerous articles in various mediums on the World Wide Web, on the www. And she has authored a book titled LOCKS, Locks for Life, The Route to Well-Being for African-American Women. That's new news to me, Kalima. I'm going to have to get your book. So thanks, Kalima, for being on the show tonight. I appreciate you being on with us.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here to talk about the topic at hand, because it's very rare we have the opportunity to do it, but what a perfect time to do it during April, which is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. You got that right. Okay, so Dayanara Marte, she works nationally with a wide array of community-based institutions, cultural and social justice organizations, executive directors, and service providers, providing holistic training focused on preventive and post-trauma healing to achieve extraordinary breakthrough results in personal and organizational trauma, resiliency, and sustainability. She does executive coaching, transformational leadership, interpersonal conflict resolution, and communication, allowing access to personal and collective power. Dayanara received her master's in public health from Columbia University in 2010, and her certification in clinical approaches to addiction from NYU. Today, her commitment is to creating another world for young women, and that led her to founding what is called in Bold Rebirth Technical Assistance and Training Consultancy. So she created a global cutting-edge trauma-informed resiliency model for victims and survivors working on the front lines of social justice crisis in trauma institutions and organizations. Dayanara is nationally known for her work, as a trauma prevention specialist, internalized oppression healer, trainer, and facilitator in emotional relief. She organizes healing circles for first responders to let go of internalized oppression and disease that manifests in our bodies as a result of institutional racism, homophobia, xenophobia, classism, and sexism. Wow, two powerful guests tonight. I can't wait to get started with both of you. Again, I appreciate both of you for being on. And as I said in my intro, I love talking to Black women about stuff we are experiencing in our lives, in our communities, in our bodies, in our minds. And with the two of you, two very power-packed women on the show tonight, I know that we're going to get some answers to some very critical issues, some very critical questions that need to be answered. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and I want to hear from both of you with these questions. And Kalima is going to start with you as we're talking about this issue of healing, sexual assault, sexual violence against women, and the arts. This is an alternative way, an alternative practice for us, as specifically as Black women. So can you talk to us about what are some of the alternative practices that you use at the Sasha Center and why? Tell us a little bit first, too, about Sasha Center, and then tell us why you use the alternative practices that you do.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sasha Center, first of all, Sasha stands for Sexual Assault Services for Holistic Healing and Awareness. And one of the reasons why we were founded back in 2010 was because I had been doing sexual assault and domestic violence work for, like, previously 13 years in an organization that wasn't culturally relevant or specific or competent even. But it was really an interesting dynamic because in Detroit was mostly primarily women of color serving other women of color, but we never had integrated into the program issues and things that I thought or that we thought could have been ideal because we were either held down by the auspices of the organization that we were within, because this was an organization that was actually within the Detroit Police Department. And so there was a whole other set of rules that we had to go by, a whole other set of ways that we had to service survivors and those who experienced sexual assault. And actually what happened was the name Sasha Center came to me in the middle of the night after I had been at an organization providing technical assistance to that had no women of color on staff, no women of color participating in any of their activities. And I told the executive director, who happened to have been a good friend of mine, is that having me here once a year to train on this culturally specific stuff is not getting it. And out of that conversation, she was open to hearing that. And out of that conversation, I went home and I said, you know, you should start your own agency for women of color, and in particular for Black women, and be unapologetic about it. And I was just like, I ain't doing that. That's too much work. And I went to sleep. And then the name, it came to me in the middle of the night like a whisper. It said, start your own agency and name it Sasha. I don't know if they were talking about our president's daughter on television. I don't know what was going on. But I sat straight up in my bed, and I said, let me do a Google search to see if I could find that name. And there was a Sasha in Canada. But there was no Sasha Center in the United States. Not only was there no Sasha Center in the United States, there were also no centers
that were culturally specific, providing sexual assault-specific services to the African-American community. And to date, I don't believe that there is any organization out there like it providing services specifically. We provide other things like consulting and stuff like that, which I'm really proud of, and I know and I am aware of the Black Women's Blueprint and Convencia and all of my powerful sisters that have been doing sexual assault work for many years who I've learned from. But what I'm saying is that specific groundwork providing one-on-one or providing group services to survivors who are self-identified, who also identify as African and African-American. In Detroit in particular, we have a large population of Black folk that actually are descendants of or have migrated up here from the South, being that they were descendants of those who were enslaved people. And so that is very specific in terms of the audience that we're trying to attract at the Sasha Center. And when I decided to go ahead and develop the program, of course I have plenty of allies, and of course people who are of other races can, if they want to, participate in our work. But again, we are specifically targeting the Black community, specifically targeting those women and men who are in this city who have experienced sexual assault at some point in their lives and who also are descendants of slaves. So we're very clear about who we're servicing. And one of the reasons why I thought, or why we thought, because I got a group of us together who were interested in also providing this very specific service, who also happen to identify as survivors, as I do. I identify as a person who's experienced sexual assault in many contexts, growing up to a date and to, you know, almost and through my adulthood, I experienced some form of sexual trauma. And so all of us got together and we decided that we would be very specific around the work that we did. So the first thing that we all asked ourselves is, how do we make Sasha Center culturally relevant, specific, and competent? One of the ways that we did that is through having community conversations. And so we had community meetings where we asked people to come and tell us what they thought would be ideal for servicing them in our communities. And then we came up with a model pretty much. And so our organization provides support group services only, and we provide support group services in collaboration with other sexual assault domestic violence agencies, other agencies that are providing that basic need support like shelter, you know, those who are working with women who are trying to recover from substance abuse and all of that stuff. But we also partner with and deliberately partner with organizations that are folks or individuals in the community that do Reiki services. We also work with practitioners who are yoga instructors. Like right now, we have a Wednesday group that happens at Sasha Center every Wednesday. Every week of the year, we have a meeting called the HIP Series, which is Healing is Possible Series. This is our tagline for the Sasha Center. And I don't want to take too much time, but one of the things that we do is we work with healing practitioners like Reiki masters, and we work with yoga instructors, and we work with hula hoop instructors and dancers, and we work with vision board women and brothers and sisters who know how to help create vision boards. We have a partnership with a urban garden, and we actually have a sexual assault support group in an urban garden in the summertime. For survivors. And so those are just some of the ways that we actually engage deliberately to do the work in a way that's a little different than the traditional sense that you heard Shazzy talking about earlier.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kalima, for sharing about your program. And I'm so glad that you followed your spirit speaking to you in terms of building that work and, you know, following through with that as an alternative way for women or victims of domestic and sexual violence to heal. I heard you also give some notice to the work of the Black Women's Blueprint in New York City, which I, too, want to acknowledge the work that they will be doing next week, April 28th through May the 1st, with their Black Women's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And that is it's held as part of the International Decade of People of African Descent at the United Nations. And this, too, is an epic and historic event that is going to be one of the first of its kind in the nation to focus on race and sexual assault against black women in the United States. This is about women and girls of African descent, many of whom were denied access and assistance from the criminal justice system. And so there will be, you know, activities each day, April 28th through May the 1st, to address this huge issue of violence, sexual assault, and rape against black women, and giving an opportunity to use our voices, tell our stories, do our healing work while we're there. So I'm glad you did raise that up, and people can get information about that at blackwomensblueprint.org. So now I want to go to Dayanara. And I am really impressed by and want to hear more from you about the alternative work that you are doing as well, Dayanara. You are doing some cutting-edge trauma healing work around resiliency for victims and survivors on the front lines of social justice and crisis and trauma institutions. Talk to us about what you're doing with victims and survivors and with advocates and your healing circles and all of those kind of things. Tell us about that.
Yes. Work. Thank you so much. I think I want to start with a little bit of history for myself. I come from being an executive director in an organization in the South Bronx that was around for over 16 years, and I come from a legacy of Afro-Latina Puerto Rican sisters who created an organization in the poorest congressional district of New York State. They developed an organization called Casa Atavex Ache, and they were part of the Young Lords Party and the Black Panther Party, and really creating alternative health clinics and models using our ancestral African, Latino, Indigenous, Native American tools to be able to support women to heal from violence, mind, body, and spirit, and to get us back to a time when we understood that we can regenerate like the earth that sustains us, that that's the power of women, and that instead of us really blaming each other, right, or the world blaming us for the violence that's being done onto us, for us to really start understanding the root causes of why we live in a world where women have become weapons used against humanity, right? Why our bodies have been used against as weapons against humanity, and why it's okay to live in a world where violence against women, is an everyday occurrence. And so they created an organization where they used the cultural, spiritual tools of our ancestors to help women to really let go of internalized oppression. And I was the ED of that organization for about 10 years, and it closed down, and I, it closed down in a not so good way that most kind of, I think, women of color spaces, we end up hurting each other in ways that are, I think, more harmful sometimes than the violence that we already come into the organizations of having experienced. And so I kind of really took a look at myself, and the only thing that I can do after being in that experience and being in the leadership of running such an organization was really, in retrospect, look at who was I being in that organization, who was I being as a sister that contributed to the internalized oppression that eventually played itself out to the undoing of the organization. And what I realized as an executive director is that my 40-year-old self was not leading that organization. Who was leading that organization was this young girl from the Dominican Republic who was abandoned by her mother at birth and who had decided that nobody was ever going to love her and that she did not trust anybody and that she was not enough and that she was never going to belong anywhere. It didn't matter if it was culturally specifically relevant, if it was all Latinas, all Afro, it didn't matter. I didn't belong anywhere. And so I created In Bold Rebirth because in order for me to undo this identity that I had created because of the violence I've experienced in my life, you know, and a little bit about me, I am originally birthed in the Dominican Republic. My mother was a prostitute in a brothel that my biological father owned and my adoptive mother owned. And as a result of that, I grew up in a very beautiful space but was very vulnerable to child sexual abuse, was vulnerable to domestic violence as an adolescent. I was a teen mom and have, you know, experienced some amazing loving relationships, but at the core of them they were unhealthy and really codependent because, you know, my inner child, my adolescent, you know, was always looking for her mother in the faces of everyone and every sister that she encountered. And so I decided to create In Bold Rebirth Consulting, which is to support other sisters who are on the front lines of social justice, who are on the front lines of healing, who are on the front lines of movements, to really take a look at how do we lead from a place of our most powerful selves and not in complete trauma.
Wow, that is so powerful. Absolutely. Absolutely breathtaking. I'm just trying to take all of that in from both of you to even think about all of the things that you've experienced in your own lives and then to do your own work and then set up, you know, agency for an opportunity and a service and blessing to help others to heal. That is so powerful. We have to take a break for just a moment, and then we're going to come back, and I have some more questions that I want to ask you, but we need to take a break for just a moment, and then we're going to come right back. So hold on. Don't go anywhere, okay? Just a moment.
Okay.
To Sister Tanya Lovelace and the staff and advisors of the Women of Color Network, on behalf of Tony Porter, Bishop Freeze, and a call to men, all the men here want to say thank you. We want to recognize and thank you for the hard work and efforts to address and challenge the rights of women of color in the movement today. We just want to let y'all know we ain't got nothing but love for you. Nothing but love. Going out to all the women of color, from a call to being gay to well-meaning brothers. Cause we appreciate the hard work that you do with all due respect. We just want to say thank you for challenging us all to be better people. Like Dr. King said, we all created equal. Staying on the front lines of the struggle. Always do the rescue for women in trouble. For crimes like sexual assault and DVs, eliminating violence on women and families, addressing human trafficking and police brutality right here in the United States, and that's reality. Well done, sister, job well done, for the call to action for each one, teach one. So from a call to men and all his well-meaning brothers, sisters, we ain't got nothing but love for you.
All right, thank you. So I'm glad we could take a brief break tonight because I'm ready to get into this conversation with you all. And so, Danira, you talked about running an organization as a lead of that organization, as an executive director, and you felt like that was your inner child that was leading that organization. I want to pick up there, and I want you to talk to us a little bit about that. Now, but before we do, I want us to answer three questions before we get off this call tonight. And the time just goes by so fast. But tell us, what does this mean? We have so many advocates in our movement that are survivors, and they are running organizations, and they are providing services to survivors. What does that mean when we're running organizations and there's an inner child that is running the organization? What is that?
Yes, that is very deep. That's very deep, and you know, you have to be compassionate because this is a conversation that we're having that not everybody is aware of, right? Like, nobody's going around saying my inner child is running something, or I have this incompletion, you know, a little girl who's doing these things. But the model that we use in the organization and that I continue to use in my work today is a model where it's an earth-based spirituality where we use the seasons to be able to heal from violence and trauma. And what that looks like is that, you know, throughout the year we go through periods of life and death, just like winter is about death and spring is about rebirth. And women don't know it, but because we are biologically connected to the earth, we also go through the same cycle of life and rebirth and everything in between. And so the model that we use for healing trauma really takes makes you aware. Once you walk into our programs and you attend our healing circles, it really makes you aware of, you know, well, what happens to me in the wintertime? What is the death that occurred within me, and what is the possibility of rebirth that I have for myself in the springtime? And so when I talk about my little girl, I'm talking about me having gone through 15 years of my own healing using that model, where I became very conscious that there are things that have happened to me personally through the ages of birth through about 9 years old that were very impactful that I didn't even have words to. And I was able to, you know, heal in a very safe space where we were able to name oppression, and that is the liberation of women of color, our ability to name and identify oppression and violence and be able to identify that within our bodies, because if we don't have a space to release that, it will manifest as dis-ease in our bodies. And so, of course, you have a lot of sisters of color, you know, walking around right now with fibromyalgia, cervical cancer, breast cancer. But once you start really getting into their personal story, you start understanding that, you know, there is a man, a woman, a violation, a story that still lives in their uterus that has had nowhere to go and now is manifesting itself as some form of cancer, right? Mm-hmm. Or that the body wants to release a story, an untold story, and it has no way to release that. And now we, you know, have a million women with different autoimmune diseases. And so,
absolutely.
When we, you know, when I talk about this little girl, you know, it was me taking some time through different programs to go back and really acknowledge that there were certain things that happened to me where I decided that, you know, I wasn't good enough. That no matter what I did, people were not going to love me, right? If my mother can abandon me, why would anybody else stick around, right? Like, if I don't have any answers as to even why I was abandoned, then a child will create their own story, because we have to logically understand stuff as human beings. And if we don't get that answer from somewhere, we will create it, and it will most likely not be a story that's positive, right? It will be, you know, I did something. I'm not lovable. You know, it was my fault that that happened. And I wasn't aware that those are the stories that I had created about myself through my adolescence that really put me in vulnerable situations where I continued to be in unhealthy and violent relationships throughout my life. But more importantly, as a leader, you know, every time something happened, you know, I was like, this is my fault. You know, I'm not being a good leader. I'm not, you know, I don't belong here. I mean, just my brain takes over me in a way that I wasn't even. And so you know, one of the things that violence does is that it depletes, right? So this conversation is about artist healing. And one of the things that violence does, and strategic institutional violence does to Black women and Afro-Latinas and Afro-Caribbean women, is that it depletes our spirit. And if our bodies are not in a state of health, then our creativity dies, right?
Wow.
And not just,
yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, right? And not just our creativity in art form, but our creativity as women is our ability to manifest, to give birth, not just to children, but to give birth to another world, to give birth to movements, to give birth to families, to give birth to organizations, so that we can meet the needs that the government is in meeting for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let me just say, I wanted to kind of interject because I'm really moved and excited about what our co-host has shared, co-guest has shared with us, because one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I think it's so important, and I think it's really important for us to integrate our own stories, and our stories are extremely important. But one of the things I also wanted to talk about is that intersectionality piece and the struggles that I have here in the Detroit area trying to run a nonprofit organization specifically and unapologetically for African American people. One of the issues that we deal with is where and how can we tell our stories in a place that's safe enough for us to be the and the both, the survivor and the advocate, to also be able to point and, you know, name who has done this crime to us. And 9 times out of 10 is somebody in our own communities. And we know that sometimes we as sisters of color face trying to protect the people in our communities and protect our stories and protect our images around everybody else instead of actually letting it, you know, be out and letting it be known what is actually happening to us. And one of the things that I was also motivated by when she said about how her model is definitely around earth-based practices, that's pretty much the same as what we do here at the Sasha Center. So, like, when we start our every group that we start at the Sasha Center starts with a libation ceremony, being very intentional about acknowledging our ancestors and where we came from. And sometimes in order for us to do this work, we have to be the and both, but we also have to get out of our own way. And sometimes as leaders of organizations, what that looks like is sometimes I have to just sit down and be quiet and say, okay, so is this a conversation that needs to be had and led by a survivor who understands this language? And so we're at Sasha Center deliberately providing services not just to African-centered organizations and African-centered people, but African folk who don't even know what Afrocentrism is. And so a lot of times we're teaching at the same time as we're providing the services. And so while we might have a libation ceremony, we're also teaching what a libation ceremony is. Or while we're also having a smudging ceremony, we're teaching what a smudging ceremony is. Or while we're using the patakis or the stories of the Orishas and talking about Oshun and Yemeya, we have to teach and educate some Black communities about who and what that is. And so we're very clear about that. And it's not easy. It's not an easy task, but it's doable. Right now, I have an evangelist, a Christian evangelist, that is partnered with a voodoo priestess running a group together. And they have successfully done it for 2 years. And it's because they both come from a very different background. They both come from very different understandings about the world, and their worldview is very different. But they do it, and they do it successfully. And we also had actually a support group that we just did probably about 6 months ago, where it ran for 8 weeks, and it was a knitting group, and it was a bilingual knitting group. And so we had African-American sisters in the room and Latina sisters in the room with both Sasha Center and La Vida, actually with the lead facilitators, running this group, processing and talking about sexual assault through the creation of a knitting project that they did together. And so those are the kind of things that we have to do and do it differently. And so it's really interesting when, of course, you have federal funding, which is good. I'm not saying anything is wrong with federal funding, but at the same time, some of that money, you can't go back and explain to them why you did it that way or why you are discussing this. And so, like, at our HIP series, we may talk about just simply
Thanksgiving recipes. Come and let's discuss Thanksgiving recipes. What does that have to do with rape? Well, we know that this is a Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and people got to get their minds right because in some of our families, some of our perpetrators still have a seat at the table, and we have to figure that out and then how to have that conversation using language that doesn't scare the hell out of people to make them not even want to show up to your agency. And I own a natural hair care salon, too, and I have natural hair care clients that tell me, oh, yeah, Kalima, I'm a survivor of sexual assault. I come here to get my hair done, and this is where I get my healing, but I will never step 2 feet into your fascia center, which is right down the street.
But let me ask a question here, though, because this is a good place to ask this. So, I mean, both of you in your own way have spoken about, you know, this as an alternative way for people to, you know, to provide services for people to seek healing and, you know, and that you've also spoken to the brokenness of leadership. And I want to go there because, you know, when I too have been the leader of an organization that I founded some years ago and provided services in the African-American community, and I know how hard that work was then, and I know how hard it is now as well. So, you know, while we are talking about brokenness and healers, and healers are also wounded people as well, so you're trying to, you know, provide these services to, you know, to people who are experiencing woundedness, and, you know, then you've got, on the other hand, you know, that's internal. You're trying to provide the services to wounded people, and then you've got your peers and your colleagues and your folks in the movement who are also wounded and broken and competitive for what, like you were talking to Kalima about, funding and things like that. So when you have an organization or consulting service that is providing such alternative practices, you've got to be getting some serious pushback internally, and you've got to be getting some serious pushback externally. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to hear from both of you. We've got about 5 more minutes before we're starting to try to really wrap this up, and I want to hear from both of you because you're doing some unique work in two different areas, but I want to hear. So, Kalima, let's start with you. What does your pushback look like?
Well, one of the things I want to say is that what I have actively decided that I'm not going to do is I'm not going to ask for any more federal, state, or any other kind of dollars in that way. And I will partner with other organizations who have federal dollars, but I'm not going to apply for them personally myself anymore. And luckily, because I've been, you know, very successful in my career, that I can actually pretty much pay for and take care of a lot of the internal stuff that needs to be taken care of at the Sasha Center for a little while. But what it looks like is
that... What's driving that decision for you?
What's driving that decision for me is because my board and I have decided that we don't want those kind of ties put on us in terms of how we're supposed to be doing the work. Like, for instance, it would take a long time for me to try to explain to somebody that an event can be cathartic and that we can actually start counting that a person attended this event but wouldn't come to nothing else, but at that event put down on the evaluation that she's going to share with her husband for the first time that she's a survivor of sexual assault. How do you count that? You really can't count it in a way that makes people want to keep funding you. And so at the end of the day, we're going to try to fund ourselves. This is an institution that I believe black folks should be paying for. By the way, if y'all want to donate to my organization, please go to our website, sashacenter.org, so that we can continue to do the work. But the other piece in how that looks for us is that we know that internally we're the wounded healers. And so I had an actual auditor come and ask me, well, how is it that this woman you have listed over here as the facilitator, but then 8 weeks later she's signing in as a participant? Because she is, and both.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to sit up here and keep trying to explain to y'all, you know, of course we're going to put in our boundaries around confidentiality. We had a long discussion and also written out in the facilitator's contract what their role is to be, if they're going to be a participant as opposed to being a facilitator. All that is spelled out, but we have it. And so we also are trying to feed our facilitators and help them just as much as they help others, and that we have group just for facilitators and things like that. And, yes, I want y'all to pay for that. But if y'all don't want to pay for it, don't worry about it, because we got other people in the community that are willing to run these groups without any pay at all. So we have a very strong volunteer base of women who've been trained in sexual assault, who also been trained in our cultural ways, that are continuing to help us do the work, and we've been lucky in that way. And we're going to continue to do that.
Okay, so this culturally relevant, culturally specific approach to services had some real challenges to it in terms of funders investing in this and knowing the worth and the value of the diversity in terms of what people need, the diverse services that are needed out there. So, Dayanara, how do you experience the internal and the external pushback in what you do as a consultant?
I think that the external pushback I get is actually not even external. I think that we have a movement right now where people are talking about affirmative justice. People are talking about health and wellness in many, many different ways. They're bringing in, like Lima said, yoga and healthy eating and health and wellness and all of this stuff. And I think that the work that I do, when I talk about spirituality and alternative health, I'm talking about undoing the oppression that we internalize, because even if we get to dismantle the police system and the government and all of these other things politically that impact us, we're still going to be left with ourselves. And
yes,
what ends up happening is that we will recreate the same structures because we know nothing else, right? And so we are our biggest judges, we are our biggest critics, and we will use the same tools, right? Our dear Lord says we can't dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. And
yeah,
unfortunately, we've internalized those tools, and they're the only tools that we know how to use on other people. And on our immigration into this country, the one thing, the reason that I think we keep saying alternative is because the one thing that gets taken away from us besides our spirit is all of our tools, right? We get criminalized for spirituality. We get diagnosed mentally ill if we start using some of these things as a form of health care when it's what we know. And so the pushback for me is when an organization wants to do the self-reflection, the transformative justice work, but they want change. They want technique. They want practices. And healing from internalized oppression means creating something so that something else no longer exists, and that is transformation. And it requires for you to do the internal dirty work, right? The dark, deep secrets that we hold. It requires us to create safe spaces. And I heard Kalima say, you know, that's really hard, right? When our perpetrators are in our organizations, when our perpetrators are in our communities, they're in our families. And so what does that look like really, right? But we have got to start creating more safe spaces to be able to do some of the deep internal work that is necessary, because trauma creates organizations. Trauma creates movements. Trauma creates families. It breeds continuous violence in our lives. And what we don't have in place is when the violence turns inward, right? When internalized oppression and power and privilege and ego lead the work, and it dismantles organizations and movements worse than the violence that we already come into these organizations with. And when violence turns inward and we experience it from those we work with, oftentimes it is irreparable, irreplaceable, and it is beyond re-victimization, right? When
yeah,
we experience trauma in our very own safe spaces and organizations and institutions and collectives and movements and families that we belong to, the stories we create during our childhood become a final thought. They finish overtaking our souls and our spirits, and they sound like, you know, I really don't belong anywhere now. I'm definitely not good enough to be here or to lead this organization or to take these people anywhere. And so as advocates and services, if you don't believe that you know, that completion can happen about trauma, if you don't believe that change can really happen because you haven't seen it and done it in your own life, you're not going to be able to take a victim anywhere.
So the question, I got to stop you right there because we've got to shut it down. I told you. We're just going by so fast that we would not get to finish this horrible conversation. But listen.
So how do we educate? How do we integrate? How do we celebrate? How do we educate, integrate, and celebrate?
Hold it right there because I'm going to give you both. I'm going to give you both 2 minutes. You only have two minutes to give me your last thought. So right there, Kalima, give me your
all
last
right, yes,
thought.
Thank you, ma'am. We can talk about this for 2 or 3 hours. I thank you all for the call, and it has been so inspirational to me. What I wanted to say is that how do we integrate? How do we celebrate? How do we educate? One of the things I wanted to say is that within the next 4 weeks, we're going to have our special Healing is Possible series, which is our sexual assault open group discussion that we had. We also have closed groups, but our open group discussion for the next few weeks after we're doing comedic yoga right now. But when we're done with the comedic yoga series, we're going to do a series on post-traumatic slave syndrome, the work of Dr. DeGruy, because if we don't begin to start to integrate and understand that internalized oppression that she's talking about, we're not going to ever get anywhere, because it's that whole piece of how and when do we deserve to heal from our trauma and our sexual abuse and sexual assault. And so healing is possible. If this call has done anything to make you feel a certain kind of way, reach out to someone. Please talk to someone who got some sense and take care of yourself, because we understand and we recognize we can't uncover and unpack everything tonight, but that we're talking about it is a success. And I really am appreciative and I really am humbled by the conversation, and I'm thankful to IVAC, and I'm thankful to the Women of Color Network as well, Tanya and all of y'all. Y'all rock. You know I love y'all. Y'all raised me in this movement, and I really am about the business of continuing to make y'all proud. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Kalima, and you do. You do rock, and you do make us proud, absolutely. So, Dayanara, you have 2 minutes also to share. What are your closing thoughts for us tonight that you want to leave with the audience on this issue?
You know, it's the spring, so I just want to honor all the little girls hearing this message tonight and for the three of us on this call. I just want to acknowledge the resiliency, right? We don't just have intergenerational or a legacy of violence in our lives, but we also have a legacy of resiliency, and we can regenerate, right? And we can give birth to ourselves. So I want to acknowledge all of us to continue to get up every day and do this work anyway. It takes something. And I'll be at the Truth and Reconciliation, so I'm glad that we talked about a Black Women's Blueprint event coming up. So I'll be doing a lot of healing work with the testifiers and the participants. We have over 2,000 registrations, and so we're really looking forward to that event. And I'll be so if you want to see me, I'll be at that space all week. And What else? I'm going to be continuing to do national work with coalitions and organizations. If you need some one-on-one, if you need safe space, I think one of the things that we don't think about sometimes is that, you know, those of us doing the work don't have our own space to do our own healing. And that's what I do. So if anybody needs kind of a confidential space to do your own work, to talk about some dark stuff, but to also talk about the possibility of what your rebirth can look like, I'm the person to call. And I'm really, really excited that we had this call today. I've heard so much about Kalima from Condencia and from Farah, and we just have never had a chance to meet. So I'm glad to be on this call with you, Kalima, and just to be on the front lines with you from different spaces. So thank you.
You're so welcome. And Dayanara, you didn't give a website or a phone number where people can reach you.
Yes, thank you. You can actually go on to emboldrebirth.wordpress.com. I'm going to be launching a new website soon. And I am also having a published book coming out, which is for women of color on the front lines, and it's a Healing with the Seasons for Trauma Survivors and Victims. So look out for that. And my number that you can reach me at is 914-357-1430. That's 914-357-1430.
Thank you so much. I want to say from WOCN, the Women of Color Network, thank you so much for being on our Blog Talk Radio show tonight, but also thank you for all the work that you've done over the over your lifespan and all the work that you're doing to make a safer space for victims and survivors to heal. We appreciate you. We love you. We applaud you, and we look forward to having you back on our show again. And so you take care, and I look forward to seeing you, Dayanara, in New York next week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have fun, ladies, and thank you so much.
All right.
Thank
take
you.
Care. Peace and blessings to both of you. All right, Shami.
Thank you
wrap.
For listening to the Women of Color Network Hour. We hope that you enjoyed the show and found the topic and information useful. If you have any questions about the content of tonight's show or want to learn more about the Women of Color Network, please visit our website at womenofcolornetwork.org. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233.
Listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program.